Housing for the Aged Action Group, HAGE for short, a housing group for older people run by older people. Present
Raise the Roof!
We advocate for secure, affordable and appropriate housing. So listen up on the second and fourth Wednesday of the month at 5:30pm on 3CR 855 on your AM dial.
That's right. You're listening to Raise the Roof, the Housing for the Aged Action Group show here on 3CR, 8:55am. My name's Shane. I'm here with Fiona. How are you doing today, Fiona?
I'm good.
Great. So I guess floods have been on everyone's minds recently with the sort of horrifying scenes out of Nepal. And we expect those to only become more common as global warming or climate change continues. So today we're talking to Jonathan Gurry, who's the Director of Policy and Research at the Victorian Council of Social Service, about a report they've put out about these issues. Is there anything else you want to say to introduce, or shall we just jump into the interview?
I guess just to say that big thanks to our regional team who participated in this report. We had them on closer to the time of the floods in the Goulburn Valley region, where they were talking about the impact on their clients and on themselves. And now VCOS has released this report, which goes into some of the issues with how the flood impacts people on low incomes worse than others. But it was really great to have them find people to speak to VCOS at the time and also participate in some of the thinking about it as well. So thank you, regional team, for that.
All right, and let's hear from Jonathan. All right, we're here today with Jonathan Gurry, who's the Director of Policy and Research at VCOS, the Victorian Council of Social Services. Thanks very much for joining us, Jonathan.
Thank you. Good to be with you all.
So to start with, can you just tell our listeners a bit about what VCOS is or what it does, and specifically what you do at VCOS?
Sure. Well, VCOS is the Victorian Council of Social Service. We are the peak body for the community and social services sector here in Victoria. We have about roughly 250 members, and that membership is pretty broad-ranging. It includes community legal centres, neighbourhood houses, mental health organisations, family violence, disaster response and recovery organisations, carers, climate, social and affordable housing, of course, is also high on that list of concerns for us. My role is to preside over a team, and I'm really lucky. I've got a great team of policy leads that work across climate adaptation, energy policy, housing, education, justice, youth justice, a whole range of important sort of policy issues for Victoria. And we as a collective team develop policy solutions for those issues, underpinned by research and evidence, and we present those policy solutions to government. So, of course, it's a pretty important time of the cycle at the moment, being 3 months rather, before the next Victorian election.
Mm, yeah. And you recently released a report called Turning the Tide, which is why we've asked you to come on today. And that was looking at the impact of the floods on Victorians, particularly those that are experiencing poverty and disadvantage. And you focus particularly on housing. And obviously that's something that we're interested in, older, low-income people in housing, particularly in the regional areas as well. So what was your motivation to focus on that area?
Yeah, well, this is a report that we're really proud of, and I'm particularly proud of my policy lead in this space, Julianne Tice, who did the very heavy lifting on this project. And together we, as a team here at VCOS, I think we've produced a report that really does hone in on the disproportionate impact floods have on people experiencing poverty and disadvantage. In terms of the housing sort of dimension, what we were acutely aware of was the low flood resilience of the housing stock exposed to flood in Victoria. So we really honed in on, one, I suppose, the scale. So this was a flood in 2022 that impacted 81% of local government areas across the state. So there was the scale that made it almost impossible to ignore. And then there was the impact. So, people on low incomes and people experiencing poverty and disadvantage in Victoria were acutely impacted, disproportionately impacted. And if you look at some of the findings we've had across both Turning the Tide and other papers we've done on this subject, people impacted lost roughly $22,000 of their annual disposable income. Unemployment and underemployment increased. Poverty rates increased by about 6%. And that's something that is unacceptable, really. Floods are a part of what is our new normal here in Victoria, and we need to be adapting much better to this new normal. And that means honing in on how we can better protect people on low incomes and better retrofit our housing stock in Victoria.
Mm. So I think that some members of HAG's regional team were involved in the development of the report. But can you tell us a bit about that sort of development process? How did it come to be?
They were indeed. And we worked with our community sector partners, including HAG and other partners, to recruit participants that could really inform a sort of lived experience lens to this project. We interviewed 10 community members and 14 community sector workers to get a real understanding of their experiences of recovery from the 2022 floods through their housing experience, how resilient their housing was to those floods and will be to future floods, and what support they need if gaps do exist to become more resilient. We then launched the report at a policy roundtable, which brought together around 60 stakeholders from across the state and local government. We brought together community and social services groups, academia, and also some financial institutions like banks, recognising that there's a real diversity of actors that need to be sort of brought together. And this is VCOS's role, really, a strong convening role to bring all those actors into the one space and work out how we can hone in on some solutions.
And before, I guess we should describe the areas that we're talking about as well. So these were floods that happened in 2022. You said that, was it 80% of LGA's local government areas in Victoria were affected, particularly badly affected in, well, the Maribyrnong in kind of Footscray type area, but then also up around the sort of Shepparton region all the way up to the Murray. Is that the areas of impact that we're mainly talking about?
Absolutely. And if you think about that, Fiona, in terms of, obviously the Maribyrnong River runs through those areas of inner Western Melbourne, and there are areas of high flood risk, and then you've got, of course, the Goulburn and Murray areas you mentioned, including Shepparton and up on the border, and places like Rochester in particular were particularly impacted. Rochester being a community that sort of skews to older Victorians, and one that was that was also disproportionately impacted. So they were some of the areas that were most impacted.
And I guess some people might think, when they think about places that are affected with flooding, they're thinking about Lismore, I guess, comes to mind. But these are places that have had some sort of flooding in the past, but the scale of this one was particularly high, and we're assuming that will continue because of climate change, right?
Well, exactly. I mean, floods are predicted now to be more frequent, more severe, and the damage that we're experiencing now is only set to increase under the present set of kind of arrangements we have, which is that many Victorian homes are not retrofitted to withstand the next flood.
Mm.
Many Victorian homeowners are unable to insure their home, or they can at best under-insure their home. And so it's having this sort of profound displacement effect across the state as well, where some Victorians are able to protect themselves and some aren't.
Mm.
And so what you're really creating, in effect, is the report goes into this, a sort of climate ghost town kind of experience, where you might have people moving to safer areas, to safer ground, either within communities or to new communities. And those being left behind in vulnerability are those that can't protect themselves, that can't insure, that can't retrofit their homes to an adequate standard. So, yeah, I think the vulnerability, the scale of the vulnerability is a real worry.
Yeah,
I mean, we're particularly interested in older people at HAG, of course, and it seems like they might be disproportionately vulnerable in the ways that you're talking about.
No, absolutely. And if you think of the cohorts that were affected in 2022, renters, women, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, and very much older Victorians, you know, you had a number that were moved into sort of so-called temporary accommodation. But that accommodation essentially, you know, and often into sort of out-of-care home environments or nursing environments, depending on their sort of profile and medical needs. But it often meant that they couldn't ultimately move back because the homes were so damaged. So, yeah, I think there is an acute vulnerability there in terms of older Victorians and the way floods impact them that we need to be especially mindful of.
Yeah. So do you maybe want to go through some of the key findings that we haven't already mentioned?
Yeah, of course. We spoke about the cohorts.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think it's worth, you know, being a conversation that's geared around housing, noting that the impact on renters and rental vulnerability.
Yeah.
You know, there was, you know, there's that power imbalance that we often talk about between landlords and tenants. And so the incentive to actually retrofit homes is problematic in that regard, of course. So a lot of renters, you know, in a tight rental market already, were suddenly competing against homeowners that were temporarily forced out of their homes. And then that just created this, you know, flow-on effect where renting became even more unaffordable as competition increased. So I think that's an area of policy reform we really need to drill into. I mentioned that the economic impacts in terms of disposable income and the impact on the insurance market. And then what I probably didn't mention was the toll that trauma and sort of the duress of living in a state of uncertainty at the time of a flood has caused Victorians. So a lot of reports back of Victorians feeling really stressed about dealing with their insurer, about the uncertainty of when their home will be repaired, if at all, about Victorians living in a state of limbo. You know, there were some Victorian homes that were, you know, for example, those that lived in two stories of homes where the ground floor was completely flooded and they were sort of forced to live upstairs. But in the meantime, that sort of flooded area developed mould, creating all sorts of health concerns. And then there's the psychological impacts. And so a lot higher incidence of anxiety, post-flood depression. So I think that mental health impact, along with the economic impacts that I've discussed, makes it something that really needs to sound the alarm for future Victorian decision makers on this subject, because it's that broad spectrum of both economic and psychological, psychosocial harm that makes floods and the long so impactful, and the long tail of recovery. I mean, some people who experienced a flood in 2022 also experienced one, you know, some in a significant way, sort of a decade earlier, and the reporting back was that, well, they barely had an opportunity to recover from the last one. I mean, it is a very long tail we're talking about here in terms of damage and destruction.
You're listening to Raise the Roof on 3CR 8:55 AM, and we're talking to Jonathan Gurry, who's the Director of Policy and Research at VCOS, about a recent report on the impact of floods on Victorians. So I guess the next thing to talk about is like what needs to change? What are the recommendations or the changes that you'd like to see coming out of the report?
Sure. So we want a situation where people experiencing poverty and disadvantage are no longer disproportionately exposed to flood risk. We feel strongly that housing is a fundamental human right and all Victorians should feel safe to the next flood that's coming their way. You know, again, to go back to the findings, some people will never return to a safe, healthy and stable home. A HAG support worker helped someone who was affected find a new home, and it took 18 months, and he had to move 5 hours away from his community, friends and support networks.
Yeah.
This is the kind of impact that we're seeking to address. We're wanting to stop the situation where people are just as exposed to future floods as they were in 2022. So what are we asking to change? Primarily, we're asking for the Victorian government to step in and establish a Victorian Resilient Homes program before the next major flood occurs. Now, it's always more economically responsible to invest now. The cost of inaction always far outweighs the cost of acting. So we believe that the investment is well worth the return. There are a number of programs that have been established across the state, co-designed between, for example, the Queensland State Government and the Commonwealth and the New South Wales State Government and the Commonwealth. Those programs weren't perfect, but the Queensland one in particular has provided a lot more security for Queenslanders by retrofitting their homes in a way that makes them feel more protected and in ways where they can move back into their home far more quickly after the flood occurs, because it's been what they call dry-proofed and wet-proofed. There's a number of things that the Resilient Homes program would invest in to make moving back in much more speedy. So I think that's the main finding here, that the Victorian government is not the only actor that has a role to play, but that it has a pivotal role to play. And by doing that, we're then investing in communities such that insurers with a more de-risked environment will be more likely to come back in and provide insurance, hopefully at discounted rates than the ones they're currently providing, because their risk has been addressed as well.
Mm. And do insurance companies have a role to play in improving their practices and maybe making things a bit simpler for people impacted?
There's no question about it. Insurance companies, frankly, didn't come out all that well in the wash, pardon the pun, of all this. There were a lot of anecdotes of problematic dealings between insurers and victims of this disaster. So yes, there is absolutely a lot of lessons to be drawn here, and we're keen to engage on that front too.
Yeah, great. That's awesome. So if people are interested in finding out more, where they can maybe get the report or take action if they are interested in doing that, whereabouts should they go?
Well, they can come to the VCOS website, and they can also email. I mentioned Julianne before. I think she'd be a great starting point. Julianne.tice, that's Julianne, TICE at vcos.org.au, we'd be happy to follow up with anyone who wants to hear more about this. We're pretty passionate about this subject.
It's great to hear.
That's awesome. Thanks so much for your time today. Is there anything else that you want to tell our listeners?
No. But just thanks for your time in promoting a really important issue.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jonathan. We're going to hear a couple of community service announcements, and then we'll be right back.
Disasters like flood, fire, and extreme heat can have a significant impact on people's lives. Community legal centres help people experiencing challenges posed by climate change and disasters to access the resources and support they need. disasters can lead to a range of problems, such as damage to your home, poor conditions with your rental home, difficulty getting insurance, issues within families, at work, and with Centrelink payments. Community legal centres can be found across Victoria and can provide help if you've been affected by a disaster. To find a community legal centre near you, visit the Federation of Community Legal Centres website at fclc.org.au. You can also contact Disaster Legal Help Victoria on 1800 113 432 and go to its website for helpful information at disasterlegalhelp.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
This is Irene Bolger, former Secretary of the Nurses Federation in Victoria. Throughout the Nurses Dispute in 1986 and the Waterfront Dispute in 1998, 3CR was always there broadcasting the voices of workers in struggle.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio and we're broadcasting live from the Baeda Chicken Strike here in Melbourne.
We've just seen all of the thousands of nurses walk through to their meeting and people from different unions showing their solidarity.
3CR. Radio for the workers, by the workers, since 1976.
So we wanted to give you some sort of internal HAG news that we think is really good for older renters across the state. The Victorian government's just announced that it's going to fund a new sort of expanded version of what's currently HAG's tenancy and retirement team. It's called the Older Persons Housing Rights Service, or OPHRS. We're going to work on a better acronym, better nickname or something. Do you want to tell listeners about OPHRS?
Yeah, so we have received some welcome news that HAG has partnering with Tenants Victoria to deliver expanded statewide service specifically for older renters. And this will involve assisting people aged 55 and older with their issues in private rentals, so things like notices to vacate, eviction notices, repairs, maintenance, rent increases, all of those sorts of things for older people, as well as a specific focus on people living in residential parks and caravan parks and also retirement villages. And this will be statewide and it's good. It's more people and it'll expand the service that Shane has been running for quite some time. And HAG's been delivering rental services, renter advice since the 90s. And this is a real kind of boon to that. So it's nice to have our expertise acknowledged in this way.
Yeah, so the significant difference is that HAG's never been able to offer legal assistance before, and as part of the partnership with Tenants Victoria, there will be a component that involves legal advice, legal support, legal assistance. We, you know, honestly have punched unbelievably above our weight in terms of dealing with some of the legal issues that come up in retirement housing especially, but that's going to be a really big boost for what we can offer to older people in a range of housing types, and we're really happy about it.
Yeah, and I mean, some examples of the wins that we've had would be the Ingenia Gardens case where we got a chain of retirement housing fixed up because it wasn't meeting minimum standards because they didn't have kitchens, and that resulted in compensation for the renters and also a big fine for the company. So we're hoping that with this boost, we'll be able to continue to look at some of the systemic issues that are affecting older residents of retirement housing. And yeah, also hopefully upskilling some of the legal sector too about what is involved, because not many people are very familiar with this type of law.
Yeah, I guess another related issue that's come up recently is that listeners might remember there was a big VCAT case a year ago about deferred management fees in residential parks, and VCAT found that they couldn't be charged as a percentage of the sale price of the dwelling, which is common. This is a sort of exit fee that you see in land lease communities and residential parks and things like that. That was appealed by the company involved, Lifestyle Communities, and the Supreme Court recently handed down its decision. They agreed that the residents didn't have to pay their deferred management fees, which is fantastic for those residents. The reasoning that they used was quite different to VCAT, so it is fairly complicated, but we'd really encourage anyone living in a residential park, in a Part 4A park under Victorian law, with a deferred management fee in their contract or who has already paid a deferred management fee for that sort of housing, either to get in touch with us or to get some advice about what that decision means for you and whether it affects you.
Yeah, particularly people in lifestyle communities, because I believe, correct me
well, people in lifestyle communities don't really have a problem. It's really clear for them because the Supreme Court says you don't have to pay.
Yeah.
If you need help with that, we can help you with that. But that's basically sorted out. It's everyone else who's in a similar park who doesn't have the exact same wording in their contracts that has a more complicated discussion to have.
Yeah, and I think one of the issues is that all of the contracts are different. So you might think you have something in, but just because your neighbour does doesn't mean you will. So we need to see the paperwork. We need to see your actual contract before we can say anything about it.
All right. Well, we're just about out of time. Is there anything you wanted to say to the listeners before we go?
How much time do we have?
Well, none. Say what you got to say.
I was just going to mention that some new laws went through, which included some reforms for renters and Res Park residents about deferred management fees and limits on rent increases, and a new registration scheme, which is going to be the first time that residential parks have had to be registered. All of this doesn't come in until October next year, but it is slowly chipping away at improving the sector. So Hag's pleased with some of those things. So, yeah, well done, everyone involved.
All right. So if you do want to get in touch with Hag, if you want to call for, you know, advice about your DMF or just any other sort of housing assistance and you're an older Victorian, the best number to call is 1300 765 178. That's 1300 765 178. If you want to get involved in some of our more like policy type positions and organising and working groups and stuff like that, best number to call is 9654 7389. That's 9654 7389. We'd love to hear from you. We are going to leave you with a song. We're still all, of course, in mourning for the great Dolly Parton, who passed away recently, so we are going to leave you with some Dolly. Fiona asked if people maybe had heard enough Dolly recently, but I think clearly not the case. And I tried to pick a song that was at least somewhat thematically appropriate to what we've been talking about today, so we're going to hear World on Fire. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back on the 2nd and 4th Wednesday of every month. Bye.
Bye.
Liar, liar, the world's on fire. What you gonna do when it all burns down? Fire, fire, burning higher. Still got time to turn it all around. Now, I ain't one for speaking out much, but that don't mean I don't stay in touch. Everybody's tripping over this or that. What we gonna do when we all fall flat? In a world like this, greedy politicians, present and past, they wouldn't know the truth if it bit them in the ass. Now tell me, what is truth? Have we all lost sight of common decency, of wrong and right? How do we heal this great divide? Do we care enough to try? Janie got a sign to carry in the fight. Marching in the streets with sticks and stones. Don't you ever believe words don't break.